section, all seven texts, I think we should be able to. And then tomorrow we'll start with the Govindam prayers, which, of course, are really the essence of Brahma Samhita. Okay. So let us begin by chanting text 22 responsively. Evam sarvatma sambandham. Nabhyam padmam harer abhut. Tatra brahma bhavad bhuyash. Chatur vedi chatur mukha. Translation. The divine lotus, which springs from the navel pit of Vishnu, is in every way related by the spiritual tie with all souls, and is the origin of four-faced Brahma, versed in the four Vedas. So here the lotus is coming out of the navel of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and Brahma is appearing, and this particular Brahma is that Brahma who is versed in the four Vedas. Not the Brahma we heard about earlier, who's the prototype, Hiranyagarbha, who embodies the mundane seminal principle, or the entire capacity for material reproduction or material creation, like that, material expansion. So this lotus is interesting. If you want to find out a little bit more about the lotus, you could read the 8th chapter of the 3rd canto. There is reference, a little more detail about this lotus. There, 3rd canto, chapter 8, verse 14, refers to the bud of the lotus. Means the actual, like the flower part on the top of the stem, but before it's opened up. So the bud of the lotus is referred to there as being the sum total form of the fruitive activity of the living beings. And in his purport to the following verse, 3.8.15, Srila Prabhupada says that the lotus flower is the Virat Rupa. That's interesting. And it was previously amalgamated in the Supreme Lord's abdomen at the time of dissolution. It is also, well, here in Brahma Samhita, the first sentence of the purport describes that lotus as being the superior plane of aggregation of all individual souls. In other words, all the living entities are within the stem of the lotus. And the first living entity, of course, is Brahma. He's the first one to come out on top of the lotus, and then he brings them all out and then facilitates them, provides bodies, planets, and so on. Here Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says quite clearly in the following sentence that the four-faced Brahma, the image of self-enjoyment, derives his origin from the prototype Brahma, or Hiranyagarbha, the mundane seminal principle, who regards the aggregate of all mundane entities as his own proper body. So this Hiranyagarbha is really quite an extraordinary entity. He is the universal form, the Virat Rupa. He regards all the conditioned souls, every single one of them, not just the ones in this universe, but all of them, as being like his body. Srila Prabhupada elsewhere says that that Hiranyagarbha is a form of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. And some people worship Hiranyagarbha, but he's not really worshipable as a form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not that you would put him on the altar or something like that, offer arati, but he is a very special form, like functional form, expanded type of functional entity. And actually, Srila Prabhupada doesn't really say a lot about Hiranyagarbha. That this is not working. Okay, just bear with us, and we'll try and get another amplifier. Can you hear me? Hardly. Well, if he cannot locate another amplifier, perhaps we should move forward. What do you think of that? Yes? Anyway, if the fan is interfering, and if you prefer being warm and hearing, which would be better, I suppose, then let us try without the fan or with it slowed down. All right. So, then, conditioned soul. And in his case, he has a particular propensity towards creating. Here in the purport, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says that towards the end of the purport, his natural impulse is formed according to the nature of the deeds done by him in the previous kalpa. Here we have another potentially confusing concept or statement. Previous kalpa. Kalpa normally refers to a day of Brahma. Normally. If you look through Srila Prabhupada's books, if you look through Prabhupada's folio, then you'll see that generally this term kalpa is used to refer to a day of Brahma, although sometimes it refers to a lifetime of Brahma. Actually, Prabhupada explains there are three types of kalpas. There is a Mahakalpa, a Vikalpa, and a Kalpa. Mahakalpa refers to that time when there is creation from Mahavishnu. Vikalpa refers to that time when Brahma creates immediately following Mahavishnu's creation. And kalpa normally refers to Lord Brahma's day. So in the purport, we see Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is using this word kalpa, previous kalpa, but actually we can understand that this is a mahakalpa, because Mahavishnu is creating. And now we're going into the vikalpa, because Lord Brahma is about to start the secondary creation. So this is really the beginning of Brahma's life. This is the beginning of Brahma's life. And text 24. So now it starts to get very interesting. Then the goddess of learning Saraswati, the divine consort of the Supreme Lord, said thus to Brahma, who saw nothing but gloom in all directions, O Brahma, this mantra, Kleem Krishnaya Govindaya Gopi Jana Valabhaya Swaha, will assuredly fulfill your heart's desire. So this Saraswati is the wife, one of the wives at least, of Mahavishnu. She is an expansion of Rama. She is an expansion of the goddess of Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune. She is not Saraswati, the material goddess of learning. She's actually, the verse refers to her as Divya Saraswati, the divine Saraswati, or the transcendental Saraswati. And she is empowered to instruct Lord Brahma. You may recall, it's actually in that 8th chapter. No, it's in the 9th chapter of the 2nd canto. There are two places, there are at least two places in Srimad Bhagavatam where there are descriptions of Brahma's appearance and what happened immediately after he appeared. One is the 8th chapter of the 3rd canto, and now we're going to refer to the 9th chapter of the 2nd canto, just before Krishna speaks the Chatushloki Bhagavatam to Lord Brahma. So it describes there how he came out, Brahma came out of the lotus flower, and he was trying to figure out, as it says here, he saw only gloom. He was trying to understand. He was in darkness, trying to understand, who am I, what am I, how did I get here, what am I meant to do now that I am here, and what is the situation? So he started climbing down the lotus stem until he felt he couldn't go any further, and then he heard the syllables tapa, repeated, tapa, tapa, twice. Those syllables were pronounced Jiva Goswami in his commentary on text 25. He makes the point that, well, there you see in text 25 in the Sanskrit, you see the word tapa appears twice. Tapas tvam tapa etena. So Jiva Goswami seems to intimate that that appearance of Lord Brahma, described in the 9th chapter of the 2nd canto, and this appearance of Lord Brahma, they're the same. But that here, you know, instead of Lord Brahma just simply hearing tapa only, and of course, you know, we can understand that he wouldn't know what to do other than just tapasya. What's he going to meditate on when he does his tapasya? But according to what Jiva Goswami intimates, at least, he was also instructed, as here, by Saraswati, that along with performing his tapasya, he should meditate on this mantra. And text 25 says, O Brahma, Saraswati is speaking, O Brahma, do thou practice spiritual association. Anyway, the Sanskrit says spiritual austerity. I suppose in a sense you could say the terms are possibly interchangeable. Do thou practice spiritual association by means of this mantra, then all your desires will be fulfilled. Now, of course, we just heard in text 23 that Brahma has the desire to create. So the purport of text 24 gives very interesting description in this regard. In fact, I think I will read this purport. It really is very interesting. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says, the mantra consisting of the 18 divine letters prefixed by the Kama Bija is alone super excellent. Can you hear at the back? Can you hear? It has a twofold aspect. One aspect is that it tends to make the pure soul run after all attractive Sri Krishna, the Lord of Gokula, and the divine milkmaids. This is the acme, which means the perfection of the spiritual tendency of the jivas. When the devotee is free from all sorts of mundane desires and willing to serve the Lord, he attains the fruition of his heart's desire, which is love of Krishna. So that, I think, we can understand. That's already been discussed. But now, the second aspect is discussed, and this is very interesting and rather touchy, actually, a delicate matter. But in the case of the devotee who is not of unmixed aptitude, this super excellent mantra fulfills his heart's desire also. You understand what that means? Not of unmixed aptitude. Not unmixed. Not pure. That devotee who still has material desire. And the fact is that Lord Brahma is such a devotee. He is such a devotee. His desire is not unmixed. It is mixed. He has material desire, and particularly in the form of the desire to create. So this super excellent mantra will help you fulfill your material desires also. And particularly, the transcendental karma bija is inherent in the divine logos located in Goloka. In other words, in the yantra. The karma bija is in the middle. And the karma bija, pervertedly reflected in the worldly affairs, satisfies all sorts of desires of this mundane world. So watch out. If you're chanting these Gayatri mantras while maintaining material desire, then be careful, because your material desires may become fulfilled in front of your very eyes. You know, generally, at least the way we hear it, if devotees are maintaining some material desires, they will generally try to hide that, I think. I don't think they go around advertising so much, because they know that that would be socially unacceptable and embarrassing. Of course, you know, to reveal your mind in confidence, that's another thing, to a suitable person who can help you. But to just go around talking about if you happen to have material desires is not really so good. So therefore, if devotees have such desires, I mean, do any of you have any material desires? No? Well, yes, we have to be honest, don't we? Yes, what can we say? Anyway, that we carry on and try and chant Hare Krishna and try to overcome those, and like this. But some devotees, particularly what I'm getting at, is that some devotees may try to actually maintain material desires within their mind while externally trying to put on a good show as if they don't have any material desires. And in this way, they will so-called try and, what do they say? Get the best, have the best of both worlds, something like that, if you could put it that way. Try and, you know, daydream about material life and supposedly enjoy in that way, while trying to be somewhat Krishna conscious on the other hand. Yeah. But if you're maintaining some material desire and you're trying to hide it, but you are chanting these Gayatri mantras beginning with Kleem, because Kleem is the karma bija. Karma means desire. And Bij means seed. So, while chanting those mantras which have the karma Bij, then your material desires will be encouraged and the fulfillment of them will be encouraged. And you may be trying to hide your material desires, but suddenly they may manifest. And everyone may see where you're really at, even though you are trying to hide it. So therefore we have to be very careful, and we should understand that just as there are offenses in chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, just as there are offenses in residing in the holy Dham, so there are offenses when it comes to chanting these mantras. And if you don't watch out, your offenses may catch up with you and you may get into serious trouble. So the karma bij is like that. Whatever it is you're desiring, it will help fulfill that. It'll help. So therefore, we should try to only desire to be Krishna conscious, and it will help us with that, and that'll be very nice. However, Saraswati is specifically instructing Brahma that if you chant this mantra, it will help you with your material desire. This is a little bit like Narada Muni instructing Dhruva Maharaj, if you're familiar with that. Dhruva Maharaj was not ready to become a pure devotee and give up his desire for the kingdom. He was totally insistent. So Narada Muni told him, all right, I'll give you a process which will help you with that. So therefore, Dhruva was very enthusiastic. This is going to help me with that. But what he didn't know was that Narada Muni was very clever, and along with helping fulfill his material desire to get a kingdom, those instructions and the activities in pursuance of those instructions actually helped him to become Krishna conscious. So the same principle applies here with Lord Brahma, which is actually four verses. And text 26 is basically describing how he meditated and what his thinking was as he meditated, what sort of inspiration came to him. What sort of inspiration came to him as he meditated on the mantra, Klim Krishnaya Govindaya Gopijana Vallabhaya Swaha, while meditating on the yantra. Brahma, being desirous of satisfying Govinda, practiced the cultural acts for Krishna in Goloka. For Krishna in Goloka, Lord of Swetadweep, for a long time. His meditation ran thus. There exists a divine lotus of 1,000 petals, augmented by millions of filaments, in the transcendental land of Goloka. Here we're hearing about Goloka. Previously it was Gokula. There's no difference. But here, specifically, it is actually Goloka. That inspiration is coming to him. On its whirl, there exists a great divine throne on which is seated Sri Krishna, the form of eternal effulgence of transcendental bliss, playing on his divine flute, resonant with the divine sound, with his lotus mouth. He is worshipped by his amorous milkmaids with their respective subjective portions and extensions, and also by his external energy, who stays outside, embodying all mundane qualities. So this was how Lord Brahma became stimulated and inspired when he chanted that mantra. In the purport, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta it makes some reference to the very last statement in the translation, which is about Durga, the external energy, who is staying away. But it's interesting how Lord Brahma, in chanting this mantra, he has a realization or some inspiration comes to him, which includes Durga, the external energy. He is understanding the external energy's position, getting that realization through chanting the mantra. And in the purport, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta makes the point that we should not make the mistake of meditating on the external energy, but we should rather meditate on what the external energy is meditating on. In other words, Durga is meditating on Krishna, and we should also follow in her footsteps, but not meditate on her. And then, if we do like that, right in the middle of the purport, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta quotes Srimad Bhagavatam, Akama Saravakama Va Moksha Kama Udaradi Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Yajeta Purishamparam. If you do this meditation, or if you render devotional service, which in our cases includes this meditation actually, even though you have material desire, but if you try to be self-controlled and render devotional service systematically, then even if you're Saravakama, Lord Brahma is kind of Saravakama, or whether you're Akama or Mokshakama, whatever your condition is, you'll gradually become Krishna conscious. And right at the end of the purport of text 26, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says, five lines up from the bottom, but there is a stage of unmixed predilection, even in devotion, for the attainment of one's selfish desire. What does that mean? Means that even if you are maintaining some material desire, still there is a type of predilection, means favorability, basically. In this context, the word predilection means favorability. There is a type of favorability, even in rendering devotional service with material desire, as Lord Brahma is doing. That is that, seeing you're rendering devotional service, if you're properly guided, then even though you have material desire, you know, the Krishna consciousness which you have can be encouraged by favorable instruction. That's what happened with Dhruva Maharaj. His actual Krishna consciousness was encouraged through Narada Muni's expert instruction. And the same is going to happen here. Here, Saraswati is just referring to chanting the mantra. But right at the end of the purport, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says, this has been fully described in the concluding five shlokas of this work. That is the easiest method of divine service prior to the attainment of self-realization by fallen souls. So we're not going to jump on to those final five verses. We'll get there sooner or later. But the point is that right at the end of Brahma Samhita, Krishna personally gives Brahma instruction. How, despite the fact that you have material desire, you can engage your material desires in devotional service, and in this way you'll become pure, and in this way you'll become perfect. And that is the final conclusion, actually, of Brahma Samhita. Anyway, as we said, we'll come to that in due course of time. But that is the point here. That is the point. And then, text 27. After Lord Brahma has been performing these, what are referred to in text 26 as cultural acts, not like Bharatanatyam dancing or, you know, something like that. Cultural in this sense means activities which cultivate your Krishna consciousness. Yeah. So after Lord Brahma has been doing this for some time, then text 27 occurs. Then Gayatri, mother of the Vedas, being made manifest, or that means being imparted by the divine sound of the flute of Lord Krishna, entered into the lotus mouth of Brahma, born from himself, through his eight ear holes. The lotus-born Brahma, having received the Gayatri, sprung from the flute song of Sri Krishna, attained the status of the twice-born, having been initiated by the supreme primal preceptor, Godhead himself. This is what we see on the cover of Brahma Samhita, of course. Verse 27 is occurring. Yeah, verse 27 is occurring. That is what is illustrated on the cover of Brahma Samhita. This Karma Gayatri, in the purport on page 46, it's written there. Kleem Karma Devaya Vidmahe Pushpa Banaya Dimahi Tano Nanga Prachodayat. This is the topmost of all Gayatri mantras. Doesn't mean it's higher than Hare Krishna, but amongst Gayatri mantras, it's the topmost. Topmost Gayatri mantra, king of all mantras, actually. And what is it? What it is that Lord Brahma heard the mantra, and he then tried to manifest the same sound through his mouth. And when it came out of his mouth, that's how it came out. Kleem Kamadevaya Vidmahe Pushpa Banaya Dimahi Tano Nanga Prachodayat. This is the seventh of our Gayatri mantras as chanted by twice initiated devotees in ISKCON. So the understanding would be that when you get to chant this mantra perfectly, then you will also hear the sound of Krishna's flute. And you will find that where the sound of Krishna's flute is, that Krishna is there too. In this way, you will meet Krishna. So that day may come, that day will come, if we continue on really trying our best to render devotional service as given to us by Srila Prabhupada. So this is a sequel. This follows on from the other mantra. Kleem Krishna Govindaya Gopi Jana Vallabhaya Swaha. That first mantra is appealing to Krishna as Krishna. Krishna means all attractive. So this is referring to Krishna as Madan Mohan. He attracts. Govindaya, that is referring to Govinda. And Gopi Jana Vallabha, that is referring to Gopinath, Krishna, the Lord of the Gopis. So that first mantra, Kleem Krishna Govindaya Gopi Jana Vallabhaya Swaha, is a prayer for shelter or offering oneself to the shelter. Swaha indicates we are offering ourselves to the shelter of Madan Mohan, who's presiding over Abhideya, that first stage in devotional service where we establish that we have relationship with Krishna. Then Govinda, who presides over Madan Mohan's presiding over Sambandha. Govinda over Abhideya, the actual process of devotional service. And then Gopinath, who's presiding over Prayojana, or the topmost level. Now this mantra, the second mantra, which Brahma got at the time of his second initiation, is higher. Actually, it's also a prayer to those three deities, Madan Mohan, Govinda, and Gopinath. But particularly, it's a prayer to Gopinath. Particularly. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta brings this out in the purport on page 46, just after where he quotes the mantra. He says, in this Gayatri, the realization of the transcendental pastimes of Sri Gopi Jana Vallabha after perfect meditation and the prayer for the attainment of the transcendental God of love are indicated. So this is Gopinath, the transcendental Cupid, Krishna, who is the Lord of the Gopis. So this second mantra, which is the last of our Gayatri mantras, is particularly a prayer to approach Krishna as Gopinath. This mantra, actually, the translation of this mantra as we receive it when we receive Gayatri, is, let us meditate on Him who is the master of the senses, who carries arrows of flowers. Let us meditate on Him being thus enthused by the transcendental Cupid. That is the translation which Srila Prabhupada gave us, actually, for this particular Gayatri mantra. Then text 28, it's the last verse in this section, and the last verse before the Govindam prayers. Lord Brahma says, or whoever wrote it down says, enlightened by the recollection of that Gayatri, embodying the three Vedas, Brahma became acquainted with the expanse of the ocean of truth. Then he worshipped Sri Krishna, the essence of all Vedas, with this hymn. And you may have heard, there's a tape, famous tape, Prabhupada recites this whole purport. Brahma thought thus within himself, by the recollection of Karma Gayatri, it seems to me that I am the eternal maidservant of Krishna. Though the other mysteries in regard to the condition of the maidservant of Krishna were not revealed to him, Brahma, by dint of his searching self-consciousness, became well acquainted with the ocean of truth. So it appears from this statement by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta that Lord Brahma got some sort of intimation, there was some indication, some beginnings of some realization of what is his eternal relationship with Krishna. He says, or he thought to himself, it seems to me, it seems that I'm the maidservant. Actually, he's still got material desire, don't forget that. He's still got material desire. And when we get to these last five verses, which we just mentioned, you know, it becomes very clear he's got material desire. And Krishna instructs him further in terms of those material desires. But somehow it seems to him that he is the eternal maidservant of Krishna. And even though, what does he say? Other mysteries in regard to the condition of the maidservant of Krishna were not revealed to him. So some hint, it appears that some hint was there, but in depth it wasn't there. But some hint was there that he's the maidservant of Krishna. This mantra embodies the three Vedas, Rig, Sama, and what is it? Atharva. Or, yeah, Rig, Sama, and Yajur. It's the Atharva Veda, which is not taken so seriously, because it's kind of tantric. Yeah. But these three Vedas, Rig, Sama, and Yajur, they're like the essential Vedas. And because the mantra embodies them, therefore, Brahma became acquainted with the expanse of the ocean of truth. He got immense realization from this chanting. And particularly this realization, which we are just now going to start reading tomorrow, Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta concludes the purport by saying, readers are requested to study and try to enter into the spirit of his hymn with great care and attention as a regular daily function. Very important mantras. And they start with text 29. Any comments or questions? Asking, who wrote the verses prior to text 29? Well, from what we understand, Brahma did. But speaking of himself in the third person. Because later on, where he is, you know, very obviously, very directly speaking, Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami, he composes his own verse about himself. Yeah. So we take it that this is all spoken by Lord Brahma. Mataji? The question is, Lord Brahma, it's described in the Bhagavatam, how Lord Brahma climbed down the stem, but we hear how the living entities, how he came out from within it, and all the other living entities are beneath him going further down it. The thing is, when he came out and then climbed down, he climbed down the outside. All the living, he came from inside. He came from Garbhadakshay Vishnu, up from inside Garbhadakshay Vishnu, up through the stem, out and then down the outside. And he could hear the waves of the Garbhadak ocean, but he couldn't go any further. And then he just, you know, didn't know what to do. And then he heard tapa, tapa, tapa. And apparently at some time around about that point, he got this initial instruction from Saraswati. So then on top of the lotus, he engaged in his meditation like that. And then Krishna came, gave him his second initiation. And then when he was all prepared, then he started bringing the living entities out. And he created the planets and, you know, providing facilities, species, and so on. Does that answer your question? Yeah. Denise? The question is that we have heard that we have all been Lord Brahma, and that is the first birth of the living entity. When the living entity first enters the material world. So actually, yes, Prabhupada says that in the ninth canto. There's one purport. Prabhupada says that when you enter the material world, your first birth is as a Lord Brahma or some other high demigod. Doesn't have to be Lord Brahma. But at the very least, some very high demigod means like Indra, Indra, Vayu, Agni. You know, these are the highest demigods beneath Brahma, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. So yes, that's true. We have all been. didn't help us much. You know, we ended up taking birth somewhere in the material world and just being lost. So anyway, yes, that's true. But, however, doesn't mean that every Brahma is a living entity who is just taking his first birth in the material world. Or even every Indra, you know, whoever may be in that category where the living entities take their first birth. No. There are many Brahmas, many Indras, Vayus, and Agnis, and so on. It's not that all of them by any means are living entities who have just fallen. No, you can go up and become Lord Brahma. If you follow the principles of Varnashram, particularly the principles of being a Brahman, for 100 lifetimes, you can become Lord Brahma. Something you could work on or consider. Vaidyanath Prabhu first. Vaidyanath Prabhu has raised an interesting point. In text 23, it says that when Brahma came out of the lotus, his mind turned to creating under the impulse of previous impressions. So certainly for, you know, someone who has come to the position of Brahma from being within material life and somehow, you know, they get elevated to being Lord Brahma, we can understand how that would apply. In the case of a living entity who's just entered the material world, then the thing is, when the living entity enters the material world, they have this rajasic spirit. You know, first of all, their minds are covered by false ego. That's the first thing. But then, once they're given false ego, the next thing which arises is the rajasic principle that here I am, you know, me. I'm now on my own. So what am I going to do? I'm going to enjoy. So that rajasic type of spirit is, you know, like this, the mundane seminal principle, the desire to create, to enjoy, to expand. And, you know, I don't know why one living entity might, as first birth, be Lord Brahma, but another might be Indra, or another might be Vayu, or Agni, you know, and not Brahma. Because Brahma, I mean, they all have that rajasic principle is acting on all of them, all of those high demigods. But Brahma more particularly. Anyway, the thing is that they all have that. On entering the material world, they have that. And then Hiranyagarbha kind of solidifies it in, you know, particularly with those who are Lord Brahma, by actually, you know, by giving, empowering with a little bit of this specific mundane seminal principle, which is actually something imparted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which will then make, you know, that the person who's taken birth as Lord Brahma properly qualified to be a Lord Brahma, actually being empowered by Hiranyagarbha. Someone else had their hand up, was it? Oh, was it you? Okay. The question is that while the living entities are still in the stem, is the rest of the universe empty? The answer is that it's empty of living entities, but it has all the ingredients for the material creation there. Yeah. All the ingredients are there, and Lord Brahma is just getting ready to manipulate the ingredients, make the planets, and then he can bring out the living entities, populate the planets like that. Yeah. Sitaram Lakshman. As I think again, who is speaking verses 1 to 28? Yeah. Now, from my understanding, I should say, it's Lord Brahma. It is not unusual in Vedic literature that the speaker speaks about himself as in the third person. An example, the second verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, Dharma Projita Kaitavotra Paramo Nemat Saranam Satam. Then Vyasadeva is speaking, but he's speaking about himself. Yes. He's speaking about himself. Yeah. So according to my understanding, Brahma has spoken all these verses so far. I know for a definite fact, the first verse is definitely attributed to him by Srila Prabhupada. There's no doubt about that at all. That is definitely attributed to Brahma. And we don't come across any statement that I've seen which refers to the other verses as if they're being spoken by someone else. So that's my assumption. Okay. So tomorrow, and before you go, you can come and take your test paper. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.